How good does it get, SK?
Why not us, Troy?
Today, live from the Pinecrest Inn, it's The Smiley Show. So long, everybody.
This is The Smiley Show.
All right, we are coming to you with a special The Smiley Show report of sorts, reacting to... It is breaking news, Smiley, but it's really the continuation of an ongoing and developing story with LIV Golf. And that is the postponement of the event that was scheduled for New Orleans, the LIV Golf Louisiana event. And so I'm going to read you some excerpts here.
Go Tigers.
Which, by the way, the man whose report I'm about to read, Brody Miller, former beat reporter for LSU.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. I used to read Brody's articles all the time. And then he entered the golf space at The Athletic. It's like, what? This is wild. It's like my worlds are colliding here.
How about it? So he wrote this for The Athletic, which makes sense now. Like, he's plugged in to this scene. So, of course, he's reporting on it. And so this was, you know, less than 2 weeks after LIV saying, hey, we're going. The schedule's continuing exactly as planned, uninterrupted, full throttle. There was this announcement because Secretary of Louisiana Economic Development, and this is where I might get some pronunciation help from the man who was educated in the Bayou, Susan Bourgeois, I believe her last name is pronounced.
Bourgeois.
Susan Bourgeois.
You get a cup of gumbo with that name.
Little coach. We're off the rails already. You got to love it. Like, this all takes a little New Orleans in the mix. Just still coming off of that Zurich week hangover. So she publicly reached out to Scott O'Neill, the CEO of LIV Golf, on the days after this news broke that the PIF, they're kind of reconfiguring their investment strategy. They might be pulling funding at the end of the year. And they spoke, and then they agreed to postpone the event that was scheduled for June 25th due to that changing business model. And they're looking at potentially planning a re-envisioned event in the fall. So, Smiley, we've seen a lot of commentary on this on the internet. Some of the spin zone on this has been pretty amazing, pretty good stuff. We had people saying, oh, they rescheduled because it's too hot and because of the World Cup. And I guess I find it hard to imagine that Louisiana being hot in the summer snuck up on anybody, nor did the placement of the World Cup. I've also saw some replies. And again, I don't have intimate knowledge of the Fox and Fox Sports, you know, programming schedule for this summer. But you'd think that taking the lead in from a World Cup game would put you in a much better scenario in terms of getting a good rating for a telecast, maybe anything else would. So I find that a little bit hard to believe. But here we are, the event's postponed. There are lots of factors going on here. I think particularly to what we cover on this show, the one that I think is worth talking about is we now have, we'll put this into PGA Tour terms for you in terms of player preparation, that LIV Golf's last event is going to end on the same day as the Memorial, which is, you know, the two events prior to the U.S. Open. They play the RBC Canadian Open the week after the Memorial, and then we play the U.S. Open at Shinnecock Hills. The next event that will be played on LIV Golf will be a week after the Open Championship. So just to give you a sense there, it ends on the Real Club Valderrama event, LIV Golf Andalusia. Golly, I'm getting killed with the pronunciations today. It ends on June 7th, and then LIV Golf United Kingdom at JCB Golf and Country Club starts on July 23rd. So, Smiley, my question for you here as we tee up and just discuss this is, what do you think this means for guys like John Rahm, Bryson DeChambeau, a lot of the other top players in this league who are in form, who are looking to tune up for the last two majors of the summer and have this extended layoff where, you know, Bryson could go play YouTube golf. I'm sure there's also reports that players are looking into getting back on the DP World Tour. We know that's an ongoing situation with John Rahm. What does it mean for these guys?
You know, I'm sitting here looking at their schedules. So they play May 7th, which is, I believe, a couple weeks from now at Trump National in D.C., May 28th through the 31st. They go all the way to South Korea. So they have two events in May, and then they go to Valderrama the week after Korea. So they have 3 weeks in the lead up before the U.S. Open, right? So that's not a bad schedule. It's not a ton of golf, but it's definitely golf, and they're traveling. So an opportunity to prepare those weeks. But the next event, like you said, being a month and a half later in Great Britain, in I guess in the London area, the John Rahm and Bryson DeChambeau, like you said, Bryson can go do the U2 thing, but John Rahm, man, the fact that he hasn't got a DP World Tour agreement done yet, it feels like, man, is he going to really take that much time off in between that and in the Open Championship? It's going to basically have his, it'll go from the U.S. Open to the Open Championship for him. That would be his schedule. And now surely John Rahm's good enough to be able to maybe overcome that, but nothing replaces competitive reps. And it's just hard to fathom that he would go from major to major and thinking that's an appropriate way to prepare. So the way I see it, guys that are young, the David Pujas of the world, the Elvis Smileys, a couple other guys took that DP World Tour deal. And I think some of them had to pay things back. Others didn't. Tyrrell Hatton, right? Like how good of a deal he has now that he can go and play the DP World Tour. And I think if anything, it's just a huge miscalculation from the John Rahm camp, because now he's in a position of, hey, he took his stance on this. And he's like, I would never play more than this amount of DP World Tour events. Well, guess what? Now he needs to. But is his pride going to overwhelm his need to go and compete? Or is he going to stick that aside and say, you know what? I need to get a deal done. I got to be out here competing. It doesn't matter where I'm playing in the DP World Tour. Just needs to be done. Like, I have to go and play to appropriately prepare myself to be at the highest level that I can be heading into, I guess in this case, it'd be the Open Championship.
When we spoke to him on Tuesday at Augusta National as part of his, press availability that week leading into the tournament, he seemed confident, and I don't know if this is just public positioning and trying to kind of maintain a place of leverage, that something was going to get done with the DP World Tour. He seemed like, that one way or another, that was going to get figured out. Now, I don't know if that was him sort of saying, look, they put their position out publicly, we put ours out publicly, there has to be some sort of middle ground. I think with the DP World Tour, the way they sort of teed that up to all the golfers who took that deal, it was like, hey, look, this is the deal, kind of take it or leave it in a lot of ways. Similar to the returning member program that Brooks Koepka used to reenter the PGA Tour after departing from LIV. It was like, here's your deadline. If you don't want to take it by then, tough luck. Now, things change, right? Like, I'm certain that Brian Rolapp and others at the global home were, in the wake of all this news about LIV potentially shutting down, losing funding, we're looking at a refreshed version of their returning member program. Maybe that has a different set of financial penalties, maybe greater than the ones that Brooks took to come back. Because you have to, because it would be bad business not to. But I think for Rahm, I assume that his timeline, his camp's timeline, was more closely tied to how do I become eligible for the Ryder Cup at Adair Manor? And now the leverage kind of shifts back in the court of the DP World Tour when you're talking about, in the very immediate sense, events being canceled that you would have played to tune up for a major. And then maybe the league plays the rest of the year, is fully funded there. But then, what is this tour going to look like in 2027? And I know we talked about this, our one and only video reacting to the news, the one episode where we kind of went in depth on all the economic factors behind this. But I just continue to wonder, given what we've heard from certain people, that you just really don't know what this indicates. Like, is this really and truly just a one-off that was a kind of repositioning of business between LIV Golf and the state of Louisiana, and making sure that the $7 million that had been, committed to LIV in terms of, whatever that looked like, to bring that event there.
Is that the site fee?
It was even actually part of that report is interesting, where Louisiana was slated to spend approximately, this is from Brody Miller's report again, they're slated to spend approximately $7 million of state money to bring LIV to New Orleans, Bayou Oaks and City Park. So $2 million towards course improvements, another $5 million for hosting fees. And so LIV actually had to return $1.2 million of what they'd already received for that, while that $2 million they'd spent on the course was just, it was an acceptable improvement to a state asset. But they're not going to get the remainder of that money, right? And so I just wonder what we're meant to take from this as an indication of, is this whole thing about to crumble, or is this just a one-off with the state of Louisiana? We don't really know. We're not entirely sure, but it's certainly it's a bad time for this to be the news story that's breaking about your league, when the questions everyone's answering is, are you going to finish out the season? And if you do, what happens in 27?
Gosh, very, very poor timing, especially with the quote from Scott O'Neill saying, yep, business as usual, full throttle, business couldn't be better. And that obviously is not a ringing endorsement for Louisiana just to say, you know what, even though we may believe you, we're not going to bet on it. There's too many different factors, and the last thing they want to do is have, you know, all this investment into this event, and let's say it does go down. They don't want to be in the hole for that. So I think in the meantime, they're just letting it play out. And hey, if we can do something in the fall, great. But at the same time, from a business standpoint, we know how poorly golf does in the fall. So it just becomes, you know, they mentioned it being an exhibition in the fall, right? Like, so now you're going up against NFL and college football weekend. And so you're somehow,
we don't want to compete against the World Cup, so let's go compete against the NFL. Like that, what? I don't get that. I really don't.
Reminder: hurricane season too. That is directly impacted in September, October is such peak hurricane season in Louisiana. So it not only are you avoiding,
you beat the heat, so you can go to the Hurricanes. You're beating the World Cup, so you go to the NFL. I mean, like, what, you know, what's the trade off being made here?
I'll remind you, it can be in the upper 90s in October. By the way, like, that's 100% still a possibility.
Yeah, I just, you know, I think that there are times where it feels like we're rooting for the demise of a league, and I promise you, we really aren't. What we have been rooting for throughout this entire thing is the best possible landscape for professional golf. Right. And we very much have taken delight in seeing guys like John Rahm and Bryson DeChambeau contend at these majors, mm-hmm. because they make the majors better. And so I think my reaction to this is, look, beyond all the politics of the league and the funding, is those guys are it really the only thing you can say about the upside of the league right now is whatever the guaranteed money ends up being. Because it's not preparing them to play major championship golf, and they're going 7 weeks without playing any competitive golf, at least on this tour. You know, if they can't go and play on the DP World Tour, so yeah. I just it makes you wonder too, because a lot of the reports that we heard were they haven't paid vendors and they're lacking.
That's the scary part, Louisiana part. That's they don't deal with that.
And how many of these other places? You just wonder. I mean, a lot of these have been places that have hosted repeat events. And so, you know, you don't know what sort of good faith they may or may not operate in, but you just kind of wonder how many of these things where they start saying, look, like, we're not going to do this out of the goodness of our heart. You know, if we're not mm-hmm. getting a return on the base, especially because Louisiana is spending $7 million of their own dollars on this thing and expecting Liv to match that. If they don't have that, that's a situation that just a lot of places are going to say, it's not tenable. I'm sorry, you can't do the event here.
100%. I would then add about just the players in general. I think there's been reports that a lot of players are publicly still backing the league, which they're supposed to, right? Like, they're involved with the league. They want it to be successful because that's the path they chose. And I think you're going to see still more of these players still, whether it be in media stuff or just online tweeting. I think you'll still see the players supporting the league, because why shouldn't they in this? Because they need positivity from an investment standpoint moving forward. So that's, I'm sure that's the message that Scott O'Neill is pressing towards the players. But there have been reports over the last 24 hours since the Louisiana tournament has been called off until the fall that there had been plenty of players that have reached out about what their potential pathways could be, whether that's the PGA Tour or the DP World Tour. And so when you hear that, you know, I think most players would be doing the same thing in this situation, just in case the whole thing crumbles, which I don't think we expect. But hey, it's not out of the realm of possibilities. You already had one go down. You're seeing support from Valderrama. I think most of the global events, it feels like they've stayed committed to this. Now we'll see what happens in the States. But when it comes to just the players and what I miss and expect as far as who's on these teams and on these rosters. Like, I want to see David Puig. I want to see Elvis Smiley. Mm-hmm. I want to see these Caleb Surratts. I get excited about young players, man. When they get out to the PGA Tour and they have immediate success, that is a feather in the cap for the PGA Tour for many years. They've ridden those young guys when they had that Matthew Wolf craze. Man, I couldn't look away when he was in contention. It was so fun to watch these young guys come out of college straight to the PGA Tour and compete and beat guys that we've been accustomed to seeing. So when it comes to players like that, I'm happy that they have a place to play on the DP World Tour, to where at least, you know, their careers aren't halted in this. If events go away, at least they have a way to still play on the DP. But players like Bryson and John Rahm, like we know what they are, right? Like these guys are bona fide stars. Like their talent is undeniable. Will we see their games slide through the years because of the lack of, you know, the lack of playing opportunities and
reps,
the travel,
right?
In this
and good reps, maybe. Quality reps, I mean, and good venues, right?
But John Rahm still continues to dominate the league since they've gone to 72 holes. Bryson still has the same issues that he's been dealing with ever since Pinehurst, really, which is just not having control of his irons and distances and all the things that he keeps talking about with the press that seems to be holding him back. But then there's the rest of the league, right? All of these players that are in the limbo of PGA Tour players, we all know, right? And deep former PGA DP World Tour greats, Sergio, Poulter, then you got the Charles Howells of the world that are all like, hey, am I 50 yet? You know, then you have the Abe Ansers, the Harold Varners, the guys that left, they were in the top 50 in the world. And these are the players that have passed champion status that are now trying to sort through, okay, what does it look like if I left right now? If I left the league and started my clock, okay, now it's a year penalty. So I know that, okay, after the Masters next year, I'll be eligible to at least, whether it be sponsors invites, have my past champion status, go play on the Korn Ferry Tour. But then there's other guys like Taylor Gooch, who's like, he has so much equity in this thing with being the owner of this new team in Oklahoma.
They just rebranded the whole thing after Oklahoma.
Exactly. So like Taylor, why wouldn't Taylor put his bootstraps on and buckle into the Buffalo, right? Like he doesn't want to see this fail because dude, he's got a whole team like in his
buckle
backyard,
into the Buffalo,
man.
Baby.
Like,
just buckle into that Buffalo.
Everybody's got different reasons in this and yeah, wanting to succeed or fail. Maybe some guys see both sides of it. Like, I think the older PGA Tour players who are getting close to 50 are like, hey, if it fails, it fails, whatever. Like, right. I'll just sit out a year and wait till I get 50 because Pat Perez, it's kind of been laid out on what it looks like. So we'll be interesting, right? Certainly, you're seeing a lot of talk online, but I think still the big storyline is what I think, and we'll see this, I think, over the next couple of weeks, is John Rahm having to either – I wouldn't say bend the knees the right way, but if that offer is still available from the DP World Tour, I think it'd be silly not to sign it.
Yeah, I think there are good points made there about, you know, there we are seeing what the pathways look like. If you're not at the returning member program level, like if you're not a major winner and all that, Patrick Reed, of course, won a major, but just the criteria that was set out for Brooks, Bryson, John Rahm, and Cam Smith, you know, so Reed. It was he last played an event in August 2025, and he can resume his PGA Tour membership, get sponsor exemptions this fall in August 2026. So if you are a player right now that's looking to work your way back to the PGA Tour, every week you keep playing a Live Tour event is, you know, further and further setting your clock back. So, of course, it's looking to see if you can play immediately on the DP World Tour, but it's also if my goal is to work my way back there, I need to kind of cut bait at a certain point and just figure out the best
pathway
to do it.
That's why people are talking to the DP World Tour right now. If you're able to somehow able to take up like membership with the DP World Tour as a player, let's say a guy like Carlos Ortiz, you know, this is a guy who's had success, played the US Open well, but still young enough to potentially do some great things on whether it be on the PGA Tour or play his way into the top 25 in the world, whatever your goals are, everybody has different goals, but you'd be silly to not have these conversations behind closed doors with the DP to see what that avenue looked like. So I think that's the huge storyline right now is following what the field looks like in their next event here in a couple of weeks. Is it going to be the same amount of dudes that play? Or are you going to see some guys start to drop off? That is the number one storyline to watch outside of John Rahm's DP World Tour talks. And then I think too, the purses. I think right now the PIF has backed it through 2026. Of course, Louisiana event has gone away. So, of course, that questions all the other vendors when it comes to funding. It's like, what do they know that we don't know, right? Because now everybody's internally asking questions that they hear something. It's like, all right, we're good, but they don't say it's good. So that's natural for any business to be like, well, we need to be asking all the right questions here so we don't get a raw or a bad hand in all this.
The narrative thing I think is really key, because it's shades of, like, I think Scott O'Neill's done a much better job as an executive than Greg Norman did.
Yeah.
But there are shades here of Greg Norman, and I think it was very naive of these players who came over initially to take Greg Norman at his word on this, but he said, hey, we're going to figure out a way to get OWGR points. They're not going to be able to keep these from us. Don't worry about it. We're going to get OWGR points. And what happened? They didn't for a number of years, and all these guys' rankings fell off the planet, and they weren't able to get into majors. And we heard players complain privately and publicly about feeling like they were hoodwinked by that whole situation. So now you arrive at a situation where your CEO, and I understand why he has to go out and say and do all this stuff publicly, because he's also trying to drum up investment to keep the belief going in 2027 and beyond. But he's saying it's business as usual, full steam ahead. We postponed this for a number of reasons, but it's going to come back in the fall. And, you know, you just wonder how much internal honesty is being shared with players of, okay, actually, we're a little bit worried about XYZ things. So if you feel like, you know, you need to make your jump, I mean, I'm sure that's not happening, but I'm just saying that as a player, you have to kind of read the tea leaves a little bit. Even if your CEO is telling you it should be fine and trying to keep everyone together, you know, you kind of have to say, wait a second. Like,
what do their contracts look like?
What do your contracts look like? And also,
can you,
like,
get out?
Yeah.
Is there a breakaway fee? I don't know. You might have to pay back X amount if you get out of your contract. Who knows? And so that's one thing that we're all just speculating on. It's like, hey, it'd be great, you know, if a player's like, you know what, I'm out, I'm done. Like, what can they do, right? With it's probably a little bit less scary now that the PIF is going away in all of this. Right. You're like, all right, I mean, this is because at any point they could have dropped out of a hat, and like all of a sudden these purses aren't lined up, the tournaments go away, and so it's not exactly a two-way street in this, and we don't know what the options are for the players.
It's all very interesting. And I think the place to leave it is exactly what you said, which is just pay attention to these upcoming fields. You know, the next one being Live Golf Virginia at Trump National Golf Club in Washington, D.C. Like, let's see what the field looks like for that event. And if there are some notable absences, or if we, you know, look at the DP World Tour calendar and see that there are new names that are Live attached cropping up there. I mean, how about we just had Bernd Wiesberger win there this last week in China after, you know, being a former Live player. Like, if more guys are looking at that saying, I gotta find a pathway, like that's something, that's the next sort of development here. And then just seeing if any more of these events drop off the calendar. So
we'll see you next week on the Golf Channel. This has been The Smiley Show.
You know, I listen to this podcast, it's really cool, and
all of our first level time fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too, so please keep it up.
For all the good people on YouTube, like and subscribe.
You guys have some good takes, so I'm happy to come on and shoot the